Evening, gents. Welcome to the first podcast post-qualification. I was looking at someone on Twitter earlier, and his Twitter bio refers to hoping that Wales one day reach a tournament. And I thought, well, he's had about 3 weeks to update that, but how long we've waited for this moment.
He's not going to change it until we actually go out onto the pitch in a tournament.
I am still convinced that FIFA will find some technicality.
Yeah.
Sam Vokes doesn't have a Welsh grandfather and is related to Brett Sinkinson or Shane Howarth. And we will be kicked out, and Bosnia will be let in on some spurious technicality.
I think Arsene Wenger is working on a plan as we speak. He's got his idea, what he wants. Yeah. And it doesn't involve Wales ever playing a game again.
No.
Yeah, clearly.
We've made full use of the squad. We've rotated participants. So it's Russell again, as usual. And we've got with me in Cardiff.
Hi, it's Rich.
And it's Daniel.
And we've got a loan signing. I'm hoping he'll have the same sort of impact as an Eddie Newton at Cardiff City or a Frank Lampard at Swansea, maybe. I mean, I don't want to push the bar too high for you, Hugh, but maybe even an Andy Campbell at Cardiff City. Only in the loan spell, not the one after he signed, because that was quite a letdown. Welcome to the podcast, Hugh. Hugh Davis, who are you? Introduce yourself. Tell us and your listeners who you are, what you do.
I'm a journalist at 442 magazine. I've been a Wales fan since I was conscious of sport and Wales, but only been able to go to matches in the last 5 years or so. And yeah, I'm living in Surrey, but exiled in England, but soon moving back to Cardiff is the idea. And yeah, I think that's it.
Best of luck with that. And with someone in the room who's recently bought a house and share your pain, is empathising with you.
Together stronger. It's the catch-all catchphrase. Yeah. Works for any situation.
Yeah. The hashtag for any occasion. We thought we'd sort of change things a little bit rather than just look back at the last couple of games. But what has probably been said about those is everything that can be said. So rather than kind of go over all the ground in that respect, we thought we'd just kind of kick back, relax and just look back at the whole campaign. But not just in some sort of chronological fashion, just kind of go through, we played Andorra, we beat Andorra, then we played Bosnia. Just maybe kind of draw attention to some of those things that, I don't know, your kind of memory stores away, but isn't quite, aren't kind of the sort of the headlines of the campaign, although it's difficult to sometimes avoid some of those. So we've put a bit of structure to it. I sent you some stuff a little bit earlier. Leon, Gareth and Howard, who aren't with us tonight, have sent some things through as well, so draw on those. But I just thought we'd kind of look back at some of those. So those moments that maybe didn't seem that significant at the time, but in hindsight maybe look at some other sort of angles of the campaign and just try to sort of capture that, really, because it's a massive achievement, really, isn't it? Let's be honest. So there's an interesting thread on the Apostle message board, which we all spend a little bit of time on. And it's an interesting thread because it basically sort of says, when did you believe this was our campaign? Because I think, to be fair, and I will defer to Rich in this case, I think he was confident before a ball was even kicked.
Really?
At one end of the spectrum. At the other end of the spectrum, we had Gaz, who I'm still not entirely sure is convinced it's happened. But it's interesting, the range of answers. Some people have said, one person said, like, the Iceland friendly. I'm thinking,
no way.
Really?
No.
But, you know, okay, fine. You know, fair enough. So yeah, I'll chuck that one out there to kick us off. When did you believe this was our campaign?
For me, it was Andorra. Because I kind of felt like, yeah, before the campaign, I thought, okay, we can realistically target third. That's highly achievable. Anything less than that's kind of not acceptable. I think it was the manner that we beat Andorra, because it truly, I mean, I watched it in the pub with you guys, and it was diabolical. And it was kind of, it really looked as if any kind of progress was about to be erased, and it would have been erased. And I think, correctly, Chris Coleman would have been sacked if we'd have lost that. I mean, that would have been, or even if we'd drawn it, it would have been dire. But the fact we won, Gareth Bale was effectively kind of showing us that he will win us games in a way that kind of, we haven't had that kind of play. I mean, Bellamy once or twice, but other than that, this was a guy who was clearly saying, we're going to qualify, irrespective of kind of any other kind of mitigating factors. I'll drag you through it if I have to. And I remember thinking, well, okay, we've done that. We've had an appalling game that we've won, and I've kind of thinking, when has that happened before? Not very often. It can only get better, but we've won, which, if you think about it, is very rare for us. And I thought, okay, we'll go from here, we'll be fine. And we were.
Yeah.
So yes, it was Andorra for me.
What about you, Hugh?
The Andorra game is always a strange one because it felt like a get-out-of-jail-free, but we don't usually get out of jail free. We usually pay the 50 quid or whatever. We'd have to, we've had it all uphill. For me, I kind of first actually believed we could do it after the Cyprus home win because it was another game like Andorra where we had the adversity. We'd had King sent off, we'd conceded a silly goal, and it was the kind of game we usually throw away. You know, we always fall away by making those silly mistakes or having some bad luck. Andorra looked like we were going to do that. But against Cyprus, we showed that we had the tenacity to cling on with it. Even then, though, I felt like we could do it. I didn't feel like we were going to do it until Cyprus away. And then I really felt, hang on, this is definitely on. We've only got to beat Israel at home. Obviously, we didn't. But it was both those Cyprus games. One that I felt we could do it, and one I felt we're going to do it. There's now nothing stopping us. Although I had a few at the times, but that's how it felt to me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's perhaps the consensus on the message board. What about you, Dan?
I'm the other end of the spectrum, I'm afraid. I am the new, in Gaz's absence, the new voice of pessimism. Genuinely, I'm not joking, didn't believe we would do it until we did it. And the Cyprus victory over Israel came through. And literally, as late as that. Because watching us lose to Bosnia, which all along I knew was going to be our toughest game. All along I knew it was the game we had least chance of getting anything out of. Although I don't think we played very badly in that game. But it doesn't matter because our record in the former Yugoslavia against those types of teams isn't very good. And the nature of the defeat, I remember thinking, here we go again. So for me, I wouldn't say I didn't feel confident. I felt a lot more confident in this campaign than most campaigns. But I've said it all along, I wouldn't believe it until it was done. I've just seen too many, you know, you could write a book. You could actually make a film about Wales's utterly hilarious and shambolic missing out on tournaments. Not just not qualifying, but not qualifying in the most weird circumstances. Handballs, penalties, hitting the crossbar.
Floodlights.
Floodlight failures. A team in Eastern Europe coming back from 4-0 down. They need a draw. They're 4-0 down, and they get all four goals. And you're thinking, this is ridiculous. You couldn't make this kind of stuff up. And that's what we've gone through over 40, 50 years.
I was going to say, can you imagine what it would have been like for the Andorra home game if Cyprus hadn't beaten Israel and we only had to get a point? Because even though it's Andorra at home, and even though we'd have only needed a draw, I would honestly have gone into that with so little confidence. I'd be like, we'll find a way. You know, we weren't losing an hour away.
And I think linking that point with Daniels, I can remember, I mean, I've said this before, the fixture list, the way the fixtures fell for us was really kind, I felt. And I think that was a factor, not a huge factor, but it was a contributing factor to the whole sort of success of the campaign. But I kind of, early on anyway, not so much later on, but early on in the campaign, I kind of had a sense that we would need to win by 5 goals or 6 goals in that game. So although it was having them last at home was great, you'd have to win by a certain amount and to kind of fall agonisingly short or something, and there'd be a missed penalty, and there'd be, you know, a missed open goal or something. I mean, it didn't come to that, and it was, you know, I think for me, it was obvious that it was never going to come to that. But I thought, you know what, I think this might be it. Not it, it is going to be it. It might be it after the Belgium away game, because they showed real resilience, a little bit of luck. But it was, for me, it was quite palpable. It was at half time in the Israel away game where they hadn't threatened, but we weren't quite precise enough. Bale was pulling shots because he'd been off. He'd had an injury or two in the run up to that.
Collins missed the open goal.
Yeah, and he wasn't quite on the money. And then we scored right, more or less the last kick of the game. And watching the pub, and I remember turning to you, Rich, and you sort of saying, you know, having been confident for quite some time, this is on, this is it. And I think that's pretty much the words you used. And at that moment, at that half time, it was quite palpable. I thought, yeah, it is. I cannot see them doing enough to turn around a goal deficit. Yeah. And then we just quickly just dispatched them. I mean, really clinically as well. which was great. And we should have maybe had 4 or 5.
Except for what he was saying as well about not really believing it until it happened, I can definitely see what you mean. Because I had a similar thing. I believed, again, we could do it, we're going to do it. But that was the objective side of me, the journalist side of me. The Welsh side of me was like, well, I can't wait to see how we're going to mess this up. I actually had that in the rugby the other day. I don't know why the rugby, but it was, even though we were about to win, I was like, we're going to lose this. I'm just interested to see how. And I kind of thought that in the Bosnia game. And then I saw these other games. I was like, the other game going on. I was like, hang on, these are only 2 goals. And I was like,
yeah,
we might do this. Not, and it was such a bizarre way. I was in the famous Three Kings in Kensington, which is a fantastic Welsh pub. So I couldn't get to the game. And the atmosphere was surreal, bizarre, because it was easily the most disappointing result of the campaign. Mm. Arguably the first really disappointing one. And that was the game we qualified.
Yeah. And not only that, it's the first disappointing result we've had in a long time, actually.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Because I know we lost to, I mean, the previous defeat was Holland. Well, you know, that Holland went on to have a great World Cup.
Yeah.
And we were without Bale and Ramsey.
And Holland were looking good then.
And Lightning is striking twice in that respect for next week, but maybe touching that a bit later. I'm trying to think what would be the last really disappointing result.
Serbia, I suppose, and that was a long while away.
The 3-0 home defeat then to Serbia, probably, isn't it?
That was worse than disappointing. That was just incredibly demoralising.
Yeah, I mean, the Croatia defeat, we play quite well. Croatia, an accomplished team. Losing at home to Croatia 2-1, okay, not the end of the world. Losing 3-0 at home to Serbia.
That was not a great Serbia side.
No, they still aren't.
They racked up 9 goals against us in that campaign. I think they only managed about 14 in the whole thing.
They've done nothing in this most recent campaign.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there, Hugh, actually. So, yeah, I mean, it is disappointing if you look at that game just on its merits, but other results went our way. So.
The Bosnia one was really interesting to me. It's kind of like two things. The first was, like you said, Dan, we played all right in that game. That was a decent performance where we ended up losing, which happens. I mean, I'm kind of looking kind of online and stuff, and it sort of lit the touch paper with some people for kind of absolutely slamming the team, like, this is the pathetic worst performance ever. It was fine. It was a decent performance.
It wasn't at all.
It was kind of pretty accomplished. And also, I would kind of feel like the players knew they'd qualified because Andorra's come. They knew they were there. Had more been riding on that game, I'm not sure if there might have been a percentage to go up there. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. I don't think the Wales performance looked like had that kind of blasé confidence of we're here, it doesn't matter, we got money in the bank. I generally don't think they played like that.
Well, no, I think they were like... But did they play like they were playing Belgium away? Was that intensity there?
No.
100%.
It didn't need to be. They're not as good as Belgium.
No, yeah, that's right.
Against Belgium. Playing a team like Belgium has actually helped us because we know what we've got. Everyone knows what they've got, and it's all, hands on deck for 90 minutes, and everyone just throws in a shift. With Bosnia, there was points where we had a lot of control of the game, where we had a lot of the ball.
We did well.
And what was annoying about it, and this is why I thought, oh, here we go, we'll find a way not to qualify. Bosnia were already, they couldn't catch us, so we should have been comfortable. We actually weathered the storm from them. They played all their best football in the first 50 minutes, and we weathered it, and I think the news had already come through as well that Cyprus were 1-0 up at Israel. The pub that we were watching it in was completely bouncing. I mean, it was going crazy in there. And even then, I'm thinking, something's going to happen. And as I'm thinking it, they score this, frankly, ridiculous goal.
Soft.
Out of nothing.
Yeah.
A hopeful punt up that nobody deals with, a bounce. Essentially, they do to us what we did to Israel. Mm. And everyone leaves it for someone else.
Yeah.
They wouldn't score that goal again if you gave them 100 attempts.
I'm not sure they'd score it either.
And I remember thinking,
this
is Wales qualifying. This is what's going to happen.
I'm not sure they'd score it either if you've got Collins and Chester on the pitch as well.
Yeah.
Who I think are more dominant in the air than combinations of, Williams and Gunter. Davis.
I would agree with that.
Which is an aside. I mean, there's Collins, I personally don't get it, and I can kind of understand it, but I don't really get it. Has a lot of naysayers and the whole Calamity James thing. All right, fine. I mean, there's a degree of evidence to back that up. But those hopeful long balls, Coleman said it in his press conference immediately after, that's all they resorted to, was just lumping it in. If that's all they were doing, maybe you look to get someone on who's a bit more dominant in the air, and Collins was on the bench. But, it's kind of... it's maybe a bit churlish. She's just picking holes in that. But as I said, you know, I think a lot of what has been said about Bosnia has kind of been said, and we've probably gone over a little bit of there ourselves.
Can I say one more thing about Bosnia, really, really quickly? What was, again, this is sort of like looking at what people are saying on Twitter, this kind of thing. There was this kind of, it seemed to be sort of almost became like the sort of, like the meme of what a classically Welsh way to qualify. I mean, I was thinking, it was like this false narrative because we don't qualify.
Yeah, exactly.
There is no classic way to qualify. We qualified like Argentina qualified in so much as we'd done all the hard work, we lost the game, big deal, we'd done all the work anyway, that's why we qualified. We qualified like a big team.
I'd agree with that. I was actually, when before you used Argentina as an example, I thought, this is how Italy qualified. Italy have always qualified. I don't think Italy have missed, I know this is a Euro, but they haven't missed a World Cup, I think, since the 50s. Italy always qualify. They never qualify for anything spectacularly. They've never gone undefeated. They'll 1-0 Malta. They'll draw with Cyprus.
They'll lose to Wales.
But they'll, in the end, do enough to get through. In fact, not so much recently, because England tend to qualify in style these days. But when I was a kid, England used to sort of scrape their way through a qualifying group, do enough, do what it took to get through. I would agree with that. That's basically how a good team qualifies.
And that's what Italy did in their final fixture against Norway.
Well, I was looking at some of the other big countries and, the game, and how they were doing
it. How Norway didn't win that, I don't know. And Italy just robbed them, as they do, albeit it was in Italy.
I think Croatia went through with a 1-0 win over someone very weak.
Yeah.
I think it might be Malta.
So you heard it here first, Wales, the new Argentina.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
The job is to qualify, and we did. For once, Lady Luck smiled on us.
Yeah,
it wasn't dramatic in the end.
No.
Drama was halfway through the campaign, you know, the win and the draw against Belgium.
I mean, again, I think one of the other things that's, I know, I think a lot of Welsh fans have railed against this when it's been said on social media and some of the more sort of tabloid outlets is that, you know, we've only qualified because of Bale. Bale's qualified. Wales haven't. Bale has qualified. And okay, he scored a lot of the goals, but he didn't keep him out the other end, although he did clear off the line in Belgium in the last minute, which people do forget. So, I mean, anyway, but Bale has dragged us to the championship. And people sort of said, no, you know, we've qualified with a very resilient, very well-organised, disciplined defence. And, you know, he's not part of that. But nonetheless, there are some, you know, headline performers for us over that campaign. And everything that's been said about those has been said. What about some of the more unsung, if that's fair? I mean, you know, everybody was on that platform after the Andorra game and, getting the champagne out and the ticker tape and the confetti and whatever else it was. And that was really great. I thought it was pitched exactly right. It wasn't too jingoistic, but neither was it too embarrassed. It was, we've qualified and we've never done this before, so let's make the most of it.
Yeah, I agree.
But are there any unsung heroes, if that's the right phrase, over that campaign? Hugh, got any?
This is going to sound a cop-out, but essentially the squad players, in the sense that if you look at so many of the players who weren't first choice but came in and made a huge difference. So, for example, in Cyprus, Edwards and King played in central midfield, so missing some key players. I'm not actually a fan of Andy King, but he played quite well. Edwards, I thought, was superb. And then the assist that day came from a fantastic cross from Jazz Richards, who at that point had only played, he just started to kind of play more regularly in the team. And then you look at some of the other stand-ins, if you like, as well, putting in absolutely fantastic performances in other games. We've had both Williams has come in. I think George Williams has been brilliant, and he kind of came out of nowhere, if you like. Jazz Richards has been fantastic. Like I said, those two games, especially Cyprus away and Belgium home, I thought it was fantastic. And to the point that I was suddenly going, oh, right, well, he's my first choice then. Gunter can go into the middle, maybe. And I wouldn't have expected that because the first time he came in, he was, you know, a guy at Fulham Championship level. But
yeah.
Richards has been fantastic. And Edwards came in and was brilliant as well.
Yeah.
I mean, Edwards actually should have scored against Cyprus and had it wrongly ruled out as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, if Dave Edwards has a fan club, I ought to be sort of honorary president because I'm a massive fan, and we've talked about Richards here as well. I was going to go for Richards, and I'll touch on mine in a bit. I was going to go for Richards, but on the basis that actually I think he has actually been, you know, what's the opposite of unsung? He's been sung because I think people have said he's been brilliant, and he's kind of...
Isn't he when he needed to?
Yeah, very, when very asked. Neat, very compact, tidy feet, quick feet, and really composed. For a player that hasn't had a great deal of professional games, frankly. I mean, I wouldn't have imagined he's even in treble figures, and he's 23, 24. You know, you look at the likes of Ledley and, you know, and Allen and Ramsey and all that. you know, Ledley's played like, you know, well over 500 professional games, and he's like 27, 28. So to have that composure on the part of Richards, I think is really impressive. But who for you, Dan?
I was thinking possibly Jazz Richards, in the sense that, but I agree with your point there, Russ, that actually he has been sung for the impact that he sort of made for us. I go for Gunter. I just always think he just does a job for us, no matter where he's asked to play or how he's asked to play, whatever the defensive formation. He's just been a stalwart for us. In every game, he's been one of our better performers, has probably had someone else get the headlines ahead of him. And in fact, no, I take it back. Against Belgium, when we beat him at home, he was brilliant in that game.
Yeah, he was.
He was superb in that game. Once again, Gareth Bale took the usual stars take the headlines and the plaudits all the way through. Unsung hero, I go for Gunter. However, just player of the whole campaign, I'd say is Ashley Williams.
Yeah.
I think basically our lack of goals meant we've qualified because of our defence, and ultimately looking back, it's our defenders that should get the most credit because they're basically the reason we qualified. Because no one can score against us.
Yeah, I don't think that's unfair.
I don't know how often you can say Wales keep four consecutive clean sheets. I mean, how often does that happen? Only conceded two in the first eight games, including two games against Belgium. That's mad. And that's, I mean, when people say Bale have carried, even when they were nicely asked the other day, they were saying, you know, people say Bale have carried you the other day. It was like, well, even though you're trying to say he hasn't, you use the word carry. I think it's been the defence that was the first and foremost of it, actually.
Of course it was. Belgium in the end, I know, you know, we've been doing this campaign, you know, for every game. We all said that Belgium would eventually motor and win the group quite comfortably. They basically, in terms of goal difference, basically thumped everyone else in the group. You know, the only competition they had was from us, and they didn't score against us at all in two games.
No.
I don't think you can say Bale carried us for those two. It was the defensive effort.
Other than that defensive clearance at the end. go on, Rich.
Yeah, in terms of unsung heroes, I would say Joe Ledley for me, because I guess with the kind of, he's sort of been promoted to kind of dancing mascot status, kind of, which I think sort of demeans actually what he brought, because I remember we kind of talked about the issue of him getting booked early on. To me, that was a defining moment, because Joe Ledley went from being an okay player to suddenly being integral. Like, he's not kind of an old school hard man. He's not kind of, because he gets sent off every game, but he basically stood up to people and said, right, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to kind of boss people. It was kind of like the emergence of the beard, and
it's clear.
It's like he's bringing out the caveman. And he kind of imposed himself in a way that I never would have imagined a player of his limited ability. I mean,
he's got better, he's got older, he's got a lot more presence on the pitch.
Presence, definitely.
Which clearly comes with experience. I was the first to criticise him when he left Cardiff and went to Celtic. He goes to the Scottish Premier League because he can't quite hack it. I take it back because he's come back. Obviously, he's older anyway, but he came back.
But I can remember Rich making this point. The standard is of football is lower, but he has to win every game. There is no hiding place. You know, even if they draw, even if they only sneak past somebody 1-0, you still have to face up to that in and around Glasgow with, what are they getting, 55,000?
I still get massive
every game.
Yeah, so it's been
I wrote about it on the blog. I used the word enforcer. I first I kind of cringed a little bit because I'm thinking that's a little bit
Benny Jones
vibe. Yeah,
but it's a more temporary kind of enforcer, I think. I don't know what the word for that would be, but
say, metrosexual form of.
Well, yeah, Chris Coleman was saying
nothing metrosexual about that beard.
No, we weren't. We weren't tough enough. We were too nice, and clearly, Joe Ledley listened to that and said, "Okay, fine, I'll be one of the people who's not going to be nice."
I would agree with that. I mean, for years I've watched Wales see superior teams outplay us, run rings around us. Okay. If you're up against teams that are better than you, they're better than you. But I've also seen Welsh teams that were passive, weak, with people like Ledley in midfield. We haven't suffered with any of those problems.
Yeah. But we're also saying to the referees as well, it's not just saying that to the opposition, it's saying that to the referees. Listen, if you don't get a grip of this game, then you know we're going to have to. You know, you're making us choose. And I remember very early on, Bale got clattered two or three times. And I think they did pick up a booking, maybe certainly one, maybe two. And Ledley picked one up. and it was him basically going up to the referee, and he'd had the card, but he carried on saying, making his point, I think fairly, you know, firmly, I suppose. Hang on, you've got to get a grip on this. You know, I'm going to carry on. I'm going to play my game. You need to get a grip on this. And I think he still could have been stronger, that ref. And I think we suffered with some of the referees, actually. We had some pretty shocking decisions. They didn't cost us a huge amount over the course of the campaign. But I think we had a bit of a rough ride with a couple of them on occasions. It's not just how we stand up to the opposition. It's how we stand up, if that's the right way of putting it, to the officials as well.
Ledley moving to Celtic and whether that was good or bad, it was good. I was a bit disappointed when he came down to Palace, not least because at that point I was Cardiff were in a relegation battle and Palace were playing against Palace, and I knew Ledley was a quality player, but I also felt he was better than that. At that point they were kind of a bottom five Premier League team, and then he went there, and now it's a question of where he's going to go next. I mean, for the good of Wales, if he stays at Palace or not, because at the moment they're now playing Punchin in their three-man midfield. He's kind of fifth choice midfielder in a midfield three. And so I'm kind of worried now that he's not going to get that much football. I mean, he's still good enough and he'll get enough run-outs that he'll obviously be firing by the Euros. But then I'm starting to think next season whether he needs to then look at maybe getting a move, because I think he's too good to sit on the bench in Premier League too.
No, I agree. But I was interested when he went to Palace. At one point, Pulis was actually playing him in the hole. I don't know. I mean, he played in pretty much every position for Cardiff, mind. But I don't think he quite played sort of up front. So I think he's versatile. I can imagine he's probably a dream for managers to coach and to train day in, day out, because he just listens, takes it all in, and then goes and does it. That said, wrote a blog about him, so I think he has been fairly sung. So I think he's versatile. I can imagine he's probably a dream for managers to coach and to train day in, day out, because he just listens, takes it all in, and then goes and does it, to the best of his ability, I suppose. That said, wrote a blog about him, so I think he has been fairly sung. If that is, I'm not comfortable with sun being the opposite of unsung,
maybe,
but anyway.
Maybe by us.
I was wondering
why
Hennessy's been sung. I didn't want to sound as, I guess he's been sung enough, using your favourite term.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether to mention him or not, but I kind of occasionally remember that he won Man of the Match twice in three games.
Yeah.
Man of the Match against Bosnia. I mean, it almost felt like in the end we could have snatched that with late header from Williams, but then you look back on the highlights and go, actually, he had to make a lot of saves.
Yeah.
And then obviously Belgium away as well.
Yeah.
And so I don't know whether it's the same, because I think he's been moderately sung, but considering, I think we know that Hennessy's a good keeper but not an outstanding keeper, one of our best players, he's had a hell of a campaign as well, even though he was to blame for the Cyprus goal.
Yeah, well, I mean, I use the term unsung advisedly, because I think, you know, it's probably not the right one. In their absentia, both Leon and Gareth have highlighted Hennessy insofar as he kept us in that game in Bosnia. You know, if we lose that at home, you know, you again, it comes up to it saying, you know, we've only scraped past Andorra, we've lost at home to Bosnia. That campaign suddenly takes on a different complexion at that point. And looking back, yeah, he probably has kept us in that game to a certain extent, although we were decimated by injuries, particularly in midfield. So I think there might have been a degree of an excuse. But, you know, yeah, he earned us a point there. And I think over the course of the campaign, if you think about it, you know, they finished 4 points behind us. If that's a 2-point swing or 3-point swing, because we lose a point, then suddenly they're breathing down our neck towards the end of the campaign. So, I don't think that's sort of fair on Hennessy. You stole my thunder a little bit, Hugh, when you mentioned George Williams, because I'm going to say him for the simple reason he didn't play in that many games, but he changed games. He came on and won that free kick in Andorra by just injecting pace, being much more direct. Okay, Bale had to retake the free kick, but I mean, it was Williams that won it in the first place. I had to go back to remind myself which games he played in. He came on only late against Bosnia. He came on for Johnny Williams after he'd been fouled out of the game, which I think it's fair to say is how it happened. He started against Cyprus, and again, I had to go back and remind myself. I thought that when Church went off injured early on, that Robson Kanu came back on. That's how my memory remembers it. Robson kind of started. It was Cottrell that came on.
Yeah.
So we actually started that game with almost an attacking four.
Yeah.
Church, Robson Kanu, George Williams and Bale. That's not how I remember the game, you know, when I was there. I thought he was really, really good that day. And he was pacey, he was direct, and they didn't know how to deal with him. And I think he'd have exerted more influence on that game had he not been withdrawn because of King's red card. So I'm saying George Williams, at this point he still hasn't played even 90 minutes over the two games. Then he comes on at half time for Cottrell in Belgium, and gave us that outlet. And looking back, that was a really good tactical change by Coleman, because Cottrell was pretty ineffective, but certainly Williams has given him pace, and he's just putting that fullback back a little bit, and he's given him something else to think about other than Bale, and they swap positions and flanks a couple of times, and then we haven't seen him since.
He pinned Mertens as well. Remember that? Mertens going down for about 5 minutes.
Yeah,
and so he's managed to get clattered by, of all people, George Williams.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
My main thing with, because I was saving George Williams as well for a later answer, I'll have to bring up later. But the thing I loved about George Williams was that he made his debut, I think, against Holland,
yeah,
and came on. And I made an ill-advised crack on Twitter, because I didn't know who he was. I'll admit it was terrible journalism on my part. And I said, George Williams is playing here because he's won a competition. And it's a terrible thing to say. I admit that. I feel bad for it now. And then within 10 minutes, I was saying, oh my God, I'm so wrong about this bloke. I take it all back. He was taking on players, he was scaring the Dutch. And then afterwards, he favourited my tweet, George Williams himself. And I looked through and he'd basically favourited every single mention of him during that game. Because he was only like an 18-year-old kid. Yeah. It was really quite sweet, that, I thought, but it made me look really stupid as well.
But you're acknowledging that stupidity, and that's the important thing. All right, let's crack on. Those moments that didn't seem important at the time, but looking back... ...
Oh,
are there any?
This for me is...
Go on, Dan.
Yeah, well, I've been waiting for this all evening.
Oh, here we go.
The thing that didn't appear important at the time was Bosnia losing the first game. Mm. I said, I think, on the second or third, or maybe the podcast we did just before Christmas, out of nowhere, Bosnia got to play this entire qualifying campaign with a handicap. We lose to them away. We finish 4 points ahead of them in the group. In the end, had they won that game, there would have been a point in it. Us against Andorra would have had a totally different it would have been a totally different scenario, given our history of failing in the most weird and wonderful ways. We were spared all of that because Bosnia lost the opening game of the tournament, and in the end, they left themselves too much to do. I got it here. Bosnia, 17 points. They had 2 points after the first four games. They won 5 of the last 6.
Yeah.
They're a pretty decent team. They were our competition in this, because Belgium were always going to qualify. Cyprus had done us a favour.
They changed manager. We were quite lucky in that respect. Yeah. If they stuck with the same guy, who'd after all taken them to the World Cup.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Then after those terrible results, as you said, 2 points in the first four games, they also lost heavily to Israel. I think the same night we drew in Belgium, we were in Brussels saying, bloody hell, Bosnia have lost 4-1, I think, to Israel. After losing to Cyprus, this is fantastic news for us. Although, weirdly, I was then worrying that Israel were going to be really good, because that's life as a Wales fan. But then they changed their manager, and then they came storming back, which is pretty unfair of them, really. They should have stuck with the guy.
I think that Bell clearance off the line as well is probably quite significant. I mean, you get, you know, if you lose, if they score in the 10th minute and they hold out and we lose 1-0, you go, if you do all that effort, you know, and you lose, win like the 92nd minute or something, and Hennessy was beaten, let's be honest, Bale clears it from Benteke, and that's a big blow. And you have that for like 3 or 4 months, don't you? Kind of think, if only we'd held out another couple of minutes. All right. It seems, again, maybe for similar reasons. You know, any particular sort of key matches? I mean, they all have their own sort of individual importance. But any particular sort of match thinks, you know what? Yeah, that was important, or that was pivotal.
I thought, I don't want to say, I wanted to be sort of more interesting, but in the end, beating Belgium, isn't it? Because no one else came close to doing it in the group. In the end, we did something no one else in the group came close to doing. They didn't expect, apparently before the game, they expected to beat us quite comfortably.
Yeah.
They, you know, the options that they've got all around the park are quite extraordinary at the moment for the small country, the amount of players they've got.
But what they don't know what to do with, I think that's the thing with Belgium, isn't it? That's the narrative that now begins to have really kind of taken hold of that team.
That's a management issue.
Bags of talent.
That can be easily addressed.
But Wilmots doesn't know how to make use of it and deploy it into the best effect. But I mean, even accounting for that, they brush most of the other sides away.
Oh, in the end. I mean, they stormed the qualification in the end. I know they've only finished 2 points ahead of us throughout the whole campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, literally every game in the end, it's 3 goals, 4 goals against almost everyone.
Well, I worked this out and I mentioned this on the message board. They, over the campaign, they averaged 3 goals a game.
Yeah.
But in two games, they couldn't score. No. And they didn't actually have a huge number of shots on goal either. Yeah. So
okay. Yeah, I guess kind of this is sort of jogging. It's really nice to sort of jog the memory of all the stuff that happened. Quite a big moment in hindsight was probably the moment that Belgium just decided, oh, let's just go home. Let's kind of, look, it's not going to work tonight. Yeah. We're a big team. We'll be fine. Let's just down tools and go home.
And which they did. On holidays.
Yeah, yeah.
It was early June the 12th.
And they
went online and they booked their flights. And
like, you just got to know when you're beating sometimes. It was strange that mentality.
Because I watched that game. You were all at the game. I was in the pub watching it on the TV on the big screen, and the pouring rain. It threw it because it'd been a nice summer's day all day, and then it threw it down from like 65 minutes onwards, just when Belgium was starting to fit. And you could see they're all soaked, and they had this look as if.
Their fans gave up, their fans were great, but I mean they were brilliant, fair play to them. They made a really good impression as well, both like in the day before and the day sort of drinking in town and that, but even they kind of went very quiet at the end and went, do you know what, yeah, we're through and quite happy just to go back on the piss and then go home.
Because we will qualify because we're too good to not win the remaining games.
What about you, Hugh?
Mine's probably not one that a lot of people will consider, but it's actually the 3-0 win in Israel, because I remember when we were going into that game talking about whether we take a draw. At that point, Israel were their first four games, they'd got very good results, they'd done really well. Israel was going to be a difficult trip. It was like, maybe we take a draw, yeah, love a win, but let's avoid the defeat. And the thing is, before that game, you consider that Wales had a brilliant draw in Belgium and obviously taken 7 points in the other three games, but you could always look back on it in a year's time and go, oh yeah, they got a draw in Belgium, that was plucky, and you know, they got past Cyprus, they drew with Bosnia, but against Israel we really looked like we could play and deserve top spot in the group. You look back and it's perhaps the game we dominated most. It's the most comfortable win we had in the group, being Andorra 2-1, 2-0, but we went away to a difficult game, played okay in the first half, second half looked superb. I know they kind of, perhaps they gave up, but it looked like, we're not just going to scrape our way, we're showing that we can really play against the better teams in the group, and if we can win 3-0 away, then we can do anything. And it gave us a huge lift in the end for the Belgian game. So Israel was huge for me.
Okay. Gaz has made the point, that's similar to what you were saying earlier, Rich, that Andorra away, get that wrong, and the whole thing changes and it looks completely different. And I think there's probably something in that. I've kind of cheated again in this, and Daniel stole my thunder a little bit. For me, I think the key game was, to a certain extent, was Cyprus winning in Bosnia. It put them on the back foot immediately. And again, the way the fixtures were kind to us, they then had to come at us and they had to get something. They didn't. And I think that pretty much took the wind out of their sail for the campaign. And I think we capitalised on that. I think other results did help us out, but that happens in campaigns. In the past, we haven't been able to make the most of that. Because I remember in the previous campaign, we were talking about how you had Montenegro, Serbia, Croatia. We thought, oh, these teams are going to take points off each other. There's going to be a little bit of a need in those games. Points are going to be dropped, and we've not taken advantage of
that. But
those.
That's it. I think results only ever go kindly for good teams. If you're a bad team, results don't go kindly because you never take advantage of it.
Absolutely.
I think you make
your own luck.
Yeah.
Wales haven't had a huge amount of fortune in those things. So those little bits of fortune going your way is... we probably just about deserved it. I mean, look at the Andorra game, the 2-1, and the fact that it was a retaken free kick. I mean, how often are they given? You know, that, if you don't score that, I think about 8 minutes left, that might have been a draw. And as you said, that goes from, in the end, a slightly awkward win. That would have been a really embarrassing result. I know the pitch was awful and we had other chances or whatever, but everyone outside Wales is suddenly laughing at Wales, saying how embarrassing is that? And then the whole squad looks different.
And you still had the Coleman out hashtag. We're still in use at that point. Why are we playing five at the back against them and all the rest of it? So, yeah, no, I think you're right. Well, other sort of, you know, favourite sort of memories, maybe sort of off the pitch type things. Leon has sort of said that for him, I mean, it was the only game he came to because he lives in Austria. He came back for the Israel game and he said it was just brilliant to be sort of live and in a full kind of city stadium. It's been a while since he's watched Wales at home in a full stadium where people have been singing, where there's been demand for tickets.
In the sun as well.
Yeah,
at Cardiff City in their stadium in the sun, Wales need to win to qualify for European Championship.
The anthem, what's the word? The anthem, just spontaneous. Spontaneous is the word. Those sorts of things, anything of that sort of nature?
Well, I'd have to agree with the first point. To see Wales playing in a full football stadium as opposed to a half empty football stadium or a completely empty rugby stadium, it gave it drama and theatre. It looked good on the screen. So it gave the theatre and the drama, and I think it energised our players. Because it doesn't happen very often for us, because we spent 10 years playing in a half-empty rugby stadium and there was no atmosphere at all, and it just gives energy to the opponents.
But I agree. What's really cool is even when we were kind of filling out the stadium with Mark Hughes, there wasn't, I don't think, a supporter culture, like a fan culture. In the Cardiff City Stadium, there's clearly a sense of, not necessarily an organised unit as such, but there's a definite feeling of, and I think, by the way, we're still learning that. I think there's kind of, like, after we had the situation, I'm going to make a negative comment. After the situation where we kind of had the anthem, we had the kind of the big Hal Robson, Kanu, Salt and Pepper thing. After those kind of blew up, there were occasions where people thought, okay, every 2 minutes, I will start an anthem.
Yeah.
The game against Andorra, in the 91st minute, people were singing the Hal Robson Kanu song.
Yeah.
That was absurd and so kind of like, it didn't make any sense to do it. Well, but I think that's a learning process for the fan culture.
Yeah, exactly. So there's almost the beginning, and I don't want to get carried away with it because it may not last, almost the beginning of a Barmy Army or Tartan Army element of almost like pantomime on the side of the pitch. But other teams have it, other sports have it. And Welsh football hasn't had it.
The Dutch will show us that they have it.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
They'll all be there.
The Danes have got it.
What top are we going to wear? They're all going to be wearing orange, because that's what they all do. So you have this entire unit.
I think we've got our own unique one developing. And it's like a process. But for me, like,
I'd like to see everyone wearing red.
Literally, that'd be cool.
Everyone's wearing red.
What I really loved, just because we're talking about kind of, you were saying that the image of the stadium being full, the image of Gareth Bale scoring that header. The moment he was like in the air, it was like Michael Jordan.
Because, well, against Cyprus.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And I kind of felt conscious that I was watching, at that point, the greatest ever player we've had, or in all likelihood we ever will have, because it was just unbelievable, the kind of hang time he got on that header. It was ridiculous. And like, this is like a player playing in a different kind of plane, a different kind of stratosphere, to like other people.
I agree to a point, but there's a similar photo of Robson Kanu scoring against Scotland, and one, there's snow in it.
The snow, yeah.
And
yeah,
that adds slightly to the drag effect. And we're in green socks, and those green socks with red shorts and red top were just delicious. Hashtag kit porn. But I mean, what I'm saying is that for me, but it's along similar lines. I know what you're saying. And there's all times we're going, John Charles did that 4 or 5 times a game, so get over yourself. But yeah.
No, Gareth Bale's a better header than John Charles.
Also, Gareth Bale's not a striker. He's a winger who's also phenomenally good at headers. We're underusing his long throw. He's got a really good long throw.
Yeah,
ideal throw. Situation, Gareth Bale throws it himself.
And gets on him. Yeah.
I mean, if anyone could do it, he probably could. Yeah. I mean, we're looking at like, he's not.
You're not allowed to.
He's just a complete.
Gareth
Bale is allowed to
do it. Gareth,
and then Bale heads it in that way.
Yeah.
That's the new one.
Gareth Bale's allowed to do it.
Yeah.
What about you, Hugh?
One of my favourite moments, it's not an important moment perhaps, but one of my favourite moments was seeing the start of the Zombie Nation cult. We'd had trouble getting tickets. We met, there were 7 of us. We were basically bumming what we could in the country. And I got some through a sponsor, and so I was sat in the Belgium, basically on halfway. Amazing seats, fantastic view of the game, it was wonderful. But it meant that while I wasn't part of the people singing, dancing, Zombie Nation half-time at full-time, I could see it perfectly, and it was glorious. It was like one of my favourite things I've seen of any away fans, and it happened to be ours. And they're so far back, I was like, kind of, there's a running track in the way by the corner flag, and I just remember thinking, their view must be terrible, and they're getting rained on, but bloody hell are they having a good time, and I was jealous I wasn't in there.
But there was a spontaneity thing about that, and I think Rich is absolutely right. That Zombie Nation thing's also been forced a bit on occasions. But I think you're right, we are finding our feet again in terms of that fan culture. Because it's not like playing games in Indian Park anymore, where it's just a rickety old thing, and 2,000 of you, you know, 500 of you maybe, can make a racket that carries others. You know, modern stadia require a different sort of approach, I guess, and different build-ups to these things. Mine, for me, I mean, fairly simple, and I tweeted the other day, is that picture that of Bale, and he's not in focus, it's the players and the staff he's running to, and they've just encroached onto the pitch, and he's running to that. And that, for me, just encapsulates the entire campaign, because, you know, it's not about him. The picture's not about him. The goal wasn't about him.
Yeah.
He scored it and he won us the game. You look at that and you can find different narratives in there. So you've got Coleman. If you're looking at the picture, Coleman's kind of on the periphery of it. Not a reflection on him. That's kind of where he's kind of ended up. But you've got Tom Lawrence in there, who at that point hadn't figured at all. You've got Owen Vaughan Williams in it, who's, you know, been in every squad since 1998 or something. without getting a game. You've got Ossian Roberts in there. You've got people who are going, I'm assuming that's the kit man or the goalkeeper coach, because you don't recognise him. You've got James Collins, who hasn't figured and has had a falling out with Coleman. And frankly, you know, his commitment has been questioned in the past. And so on and so forth. And you can find these little Chesters in there. You know, you can find
Sean McDonald narratives. In there as well, I remember.
Sorry?
Sean McDonald in there as well, who, like, that's basically come out of nowhere. He's got three caps for us now and played about 5 minutes.
Yeah, you can find those sort of little things, and it's a confession, you're going looking for them, you're going digging for them. But I just think the picture sums up the whole thing, and the fact that Bale isn't in focus, all the others are, and he's won us that game, but it's not about him, and I just think that, for me, just encapsulates it, and so I made it our avatar on Twitter. Coleman then, all right? You know, we've given him a bit of a rough ride.
Yeah.
Rich, a wonderful, is it a metaphor or a simile or I don't know. I will defer to the author amongst us. He said it's he's Cuba Gooding Jr. in Jerry Maguire. He knows this is his Oscar winning moment. And so, okay, let's give him some dues. Your favourite Coleman moment, if you have one. Hugh?
No, sorry, I was laughing at the comparison.
It is brilliant. Yeah, no, I mean, your favourite sort of Coleman moment then, other than being compared to Cuba Gooding Jr. and Jerry Maguire?
I don't know. The thing I've got with Coleman is, while he's obviously done a fantastic job, there's a small part that's really endearing where he almost seems like he knows he's on the crest of a wave and occasionally riding the odd bit of luck and fortune, even though obviously it's more than that. You occasionally get this insight that he's a bit surprised. So when he said that he hasn't taken off his jacket in a game since the 6-1 defeat to Serbia, I really love that bit, because it was a little bit kind of like, God bless, I reckon a small part of him really does think that's it. However well we set up, but a small part of him thinks it's all in the jacket. I've not been slow to criticise him in the past. I won't pretend I thought he was a good appointment. And I think even at the Andorra game, I was worried. But he's completely proven me wrong, and the way he's done it is off the pitch. I think some of his tactics occasionally I didn't agree with. Sometimes I didn't agree with the substitutions made even in this campaign. But the fact that the entire squad can't wait to get together, and the kind of togetherness they've got is incredible, better than it's been in Wales for a long time. And that's almost entirely down to him, I think. And so that's I've got to praise him for that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Dan?
Yeah, there's no single sort of moment. To be fair, I sort of echo what's just been said. I think Coleman, in a way, once this sort of bandwagon got rolling, took more and more of a backseat role, and in my opinion, didn't go making himself centre of attention, making these big, bold statements, just realised something good was going on, and all he needed to do was keep shepherding it along.
Mm.
I think ultimately, in an understated way, I'll echo what has just been said, that the success is the players wanting to play. We haven't had this sort of camaraderie in the Wales camp probably since Yorath. Always turning up, always wanting to make themselves available. Alex Ferguson was interviewed recently, wouldn't he, because of, you know, this latest thing about him going to Harvard and all the rest of it, a documentary about him. And he said, they said, what is the key to management specifically? And he said, it's the art of persuading people to join you. And Coleman's done that quite well.
Yeah,
he's done, he's done that very well, because the players are showing a level of dedication and commitment that we haven't really, for obvious reasons, because we've struggled in the past, but we haven't seen for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to take some credit for that.
I took a lot of credit for it. Rich?
Yeah, I think, again, I'll kind of echo what Hugh said, really. I wasn't a fan of his appointment. I think he kind of made some horrific, horrendous missteps along the way. But in this campaign, he's kind of gradually grown. And I've really enjoyed, actually, slightly possibly different to what you were saying there, Dan. He's like bullish. I mean, I know Leon has kind of written a blog about this, and I would agree, his sort of bullish nature. I mean, today we had him doing a kind of Louis van Gaal-esque gesture of holding up a mobile phone in a press conference saying, why didn't Arsene Wenger call me? He never would have thought to do that before. Well, because
we've qualified there.
Well, yeah, exactly. When you're doing things like that, this is someone who kind of feels, yeah, I'm confident and I'm comfortable. I mean, I think kind of what you were saying there again, Dan, the way he's kind of just sort of fostered that environment of people want to be there. I mean, look, I will stand by this. this is his Oscar-winning moment. I think he'll qualify for a World Cup, and I think we'll do really well in the Euros. But he's not a club manager. I mean, I see a long, eccentric journey around different countries in the world once he leaves Wales in terms of like international management.
He's already done that, hasn't he?
Well, international management.
Clubs, yeah.
Oh, right, yeah.
I don't.
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I mean, that would be fantastic for him personally. But I think he's a guy who's kind of realised I'm in my moment, and he's got everything right as well. I mean, you can't really kind of do any wrong. I mean, he could have blown the James Collins situation, but he dealt with it in a way that was natural to him. So he said, "Oh look, we're two guys. We'll have like a forthright conversation." I mean, a lot of people wouldn't do that, and it's going to be, which again relates back to when he took over and he was going really badly because he was kind of trying to emulate Gary Speed. He's come out and said, "Look, that wasn't right." And I thought, well, look, I'm going to get fired if I keep doing this. Mm-hmm. So he just did what was true to him, and it happened that it worked. And that's lovely. That's beautiful.
Yeah. And as you said, yeah, Leon's touched on it. We had someone from Jamie Thomas, a training journalist. He did something along similar lines. And I think, I agree with you. I think it's that bullishness in the press conferences. I mean, for me, it's a particular one. It's the one between the Bosnia and the Cyprus games. And I don't know, the Cyprus game, he just seemed to go in there and he just was much more assertive. He was more articulate. He's not the most articulate speakers, no. I think it's fair to say. But he just seemed to be dealing with that platform, that stage, literally, in a different way. And onwards and upwards from that. And Howell said the same thing. Leon has said the same thing here as well. That bullishness on his part has been really, really refreshing. And I haven't seen the mobile phone thing, so I'm gonna find
that. It's big.
so within the Cuba Gooding parallel, that's the show me the money bit or not?
Well, hopefully the show me the money bit that's yet to come.
The show me the money bit will be when he's managing Qatar and he's having his salary delivered in a lorry every month. Okay.
Or managing Namibia in the Rugby World Cup.
Despite the fact they're in a Vauxhall dealership, which I wish they'd stop doing.
Yeah.
It's so low rent, it's fantastic.
He's going to announce that team spread eagled across a bonnet at some point, is he? In a bikini. We're not that far away. And let's be honest, he's bronzed enough to do it.
He is.
Okay, I phrased this one, who could have done better, which I think, again, is a bit sort of churlish. As great as it's been, those sort of tinges of disappointment where you think, okay, we needed to have seen more of, or so-and-so could have done better. Is there anyone for any of you?
Sam Vokes. Don't think he's done anything. I know we had the injury for the start of the campaign, he's just come back, but I find that we're going to be using, of course he had that nasty injury, we're going to keep using this excuse for too long. He's offering us very, very little.
He was pretty ineffective against Andorra, it's fair to say.
I haven't seen him,
to feel a bit sorry for him after a while.
I haven't even seen him have an almost like an effective touch or a shot or an assist. He hasn't been a crucial player in the campaign as a whole because he was injured or coming back from injury for the first half of the campaign. But I haven't seen anything from him at all. So
I don't think that's unfair. Hugh?
Yeah, I can see what you mean with Vokes. At the start of the campaign, when Burnley just had a fantastic... He just scored 20 goals or whatever for Burnley in the Championship. It felt like we finally got a regular Premier League striker now. And then he got this horrible injury. In fact, sorry, that was near the end of the campaign already. So we already knew he was injured. But he hasn't really come back. So I do see what you mean. And I don't think he's ever going to be the same player again, which is a great shame. But it's true that he has... underperformed, as harsh as that sounds. For me, and I mean, people who follow me on Twitter will know that this isn't a new thing for me, but I think Andy King still isn't showing the promise he shows at club level, in the sense that Leicester fans love him and don't understand why Wales fans don't think he's amazing. He's basically a goal-scoring midfielder who scored two for Wales, one accidentally and missed a couple of sitters. For us, he's not really shown that threat going forward, and when he's had to sit deeper, such as he did against Cyprus away, he's done okay, but he got overshone, in my opinion anyway, by Rob Edwards, who was in the Championship and also came in out of the blue. And I thought he played a much better game against Cyprus at home, obviously. He got us into a bit of trouble with the red card. And I just feel that central midfield is one area where we've got really quite a few options. And for a while under Coleman, it felt like he was a guaranteed pick, and I don't think he's quite justified it. I feel really bad saying it because I don't really want to slag him off, and I think King hasn't quite performed at the level he can. And I think he's had a good campaign, but I think Neil Taylor can do better. again, not too much of criticism, but I think going forward, he just needs to perform to the level he can. I think he's had a good campaign, but I think Neil Taylor can do better. Again, not too much of criticism, but I think going forward, he just needs to offer a bit more. I mean, the chance he missed Cyprus away, for example, I know it's not his job to get in the box and follow up free kicks and score, but you can absolutely see at that moment why he hasn't scored a goal for club or country in 3 years. So if he's going to play as a wing back, I think he needs to offer a bit more, because I actually sometimes think Ben Davis offers more going forward. But again, I think Neil Taylor's been good and very good defensively. I just wanted to see him offering a bit more if he's going to play as wing back when he goes forward.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I don't apologise, I feel bad posing the question. But I mean, it seems sort of churlish to kind of pick holes in the campaign or pick on individuals. But I don't think that's unreasonable. I've gone for it would have been nice to have seen, again, it's down to injuries, but I would like to have seen more of Johnny Williams. Mm. And Gaz makes a perfect point here. He says here, one big performance per campaign is not enough, and that's kind of how it's becoming. One and a half big performance. Performances per campaign. So I think it's interesting, he's in the squad, I think, for Holland, isn't he, now next week?
Yes.
And there's no Bale and there's no Ramsey. I think he's going to have a game, and he's going to have to really, really perform. And it's unfair, again, to criticise too much, because he's not had a run of games at club level. He gets farmed out on loan. He's, you know, struggling with injuries and things like that. So he's not got, he doesn't seem to get into a groove, into a rhythm. Gaz makes the point, you know, Wales fans lionise him, and there is a little bit of that, and I think, to be fair, has he done enough to justify it? It's more about the potential and the hope and the aspiration rather than what has actually happened. And I think the other one for me then was Emil Hughes. Stealing the thunder there, have I? I think
harsh. I really like Emil Hughes. I don't think that's harsh.
I think no, I like him. I really, really rate him. We didn't see him, and he's still, we've still really pretty much just got that Iceland game, his debut. So everything we're saying about him is based on...
Is he still based on that? Well, he's on loan at Huddersfield.
And he's scoring.
And he's doing right. I mean, I think kind of it's like with Johnny Williams, really. There's kind of the mitigating factors of injuries, bad club situations. I mean, Emir Hughes, his move to Wigan was an unmitigated disaster. I mean, that was awful. Like, that really kind of didn't pan out for him. And I think Emir Hughes is a much, much better player than Joe Ledley. Like, I mean, it's all like technique, physicality, way, way ahead of him, but he just hasn't had that kind of run. I mean, people like Emir Hughes, Johnny Williams need to play 25 games in a row, basically. And that's a minimum. They need like a season of being professional footballers playing first team football. So that's kind of
controlling games and winning games and dictating things as well.
Yeah. I mean, the way I would kind of see the situation I'd be kind of hoping for is Johnny Williams, Emir Hughes play all this season. They're in the mix to be like credible starters, credible sort of options. I mean, at the moment, I don't think Emir Hughes, Johnny Williams are. I mean, I love Johnny Williams. I think he's like technique-wise is out of this world, like truly, truly, like brilliant. But you're right; he kind of hasn't played enough, and you need to play games, otherwise, otherwise you're not really a footballer.
I think that's, I don't think that's harsh at all. Squad was announced today for the Holland game. Only one new cap, or one new addition, then, if you like, in the form of Tom Bradshaw. And the last question I've got, I think, touches on this, and Leon has suggested that it might be Bradshaw, but you know, obviously, we're going to France. There'll be a squad of, what is a championship squad? Is it 24 or
23
will be announced. Like today's squad, much of it picks itself, I think that's fair to say. But is there anybody you see between now and then who might just make a bit of a bolter for it, make a dash, be a bit of a wild card?
It's difficult because we blood our players so young, which is a good thing, obviously. We bring in players like George Williams before they've played much club football. So anyone you kind of think might have an outside shot almost has had an outside shot already. That said, I hope, even though he's not that young, that Bradshaw gets the chance against Holland and makes a late charge, because I think at the moment we're lacking a real goal-scoring striker, and I don't know a huge amount as a player, but he's got 9 this season. He's got more this season than Vokes and Church have in each of their last 2 seasons combined. So I hope he keeps that up and impresses. Also, as a Cardiff fan, I'd like to see Declan John get a run of games somewhere, anywhere, and then get into the Cardiff team and go, because otherwise there's not going to be any Cardiff players.
There's a project happening at Panteg with Gabidon. There's a project happening at Aberbargo Buds as well with Darcy Blake. So, you know, maybe the Welsh League is beckoning for Declan John if he needs to get games anywhere.
It's difficult. I guess there's West Brom, there's Tyler Roberts. I mean, I can't claim to have seen an awful lot of him, but he seems like this is an interesting guy. Harry Wilson, well, he's on loan at the moment, isn't he? It's a crew. Harry Wilson's on loan, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's difficult. I mean, we haven't got a huge pool.
Yeah, well, one player that interests me, I mean, he's not new in any way or whatever, but is this Sean McDonald at Bournemouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I presume when he went to Bournemouth, clearly wouldn't have been in the Premiership at the time, but you've got, you know, is he getting any game time at all with Bournemouth? Or is nothing
he played in the Carling Cup.
It's one of those, is it?
But, I mean, the Rumbelows Cup.
Yeah, I mean, well, but then again, Ledley's not doing much better at Palace. You know, is Tom Lawrence playing regularly at club level? Because he looks good.
Getting games at Blackburn. Yeah, I was impressed with him when he came on. But they've been in the squad for a while. I mean, McDonald's been in and out, I suppose. Yeah, I suppose it's anybody outside that squad.
Is there anyone between now and next summer who is going to, whether they're on loan somewhere or like Sean McDonald, you know, now in the Premiership almost by default, going to start suddenly doing something? You think, you know, because normally in any tournament, any country, some guy will hit form 6 months before the tournament and ends up going in as a wild card and then possibly making an impact. I've got the squad here for the Holland game. Defensive midfield, we look sound. We've got options. We got more than options. But in front of goal, without Ramsey and Robson Kanu's out as well, is he?
Yeah.
And without Bale and Robson Kanu, I'm struggling to see a scoring goal against anyone.
There's not a huge
let,
step
let
there,
alone and it, Holland.
And on that grounds, I think if there's anybody, I think it's going to be up front. I think it'll be the likes of, I mean, maybe Wilson, but we've seen Wilson, so you know. So I will stick my neck out, and I'll say sort of Tyler Roberts. Pulis has had him in and around the first team squad at West Brom. He's highly rated there. He's highly rated with Wales. He's trained with Wales. Maybe a Wes Burns, maybe a Tommy O'Sullivan, because I can see us needing to go with somebody.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we offer enough of a threat up front from the incumbents. Although
I think Johnny Williams might play on the wing for certainly a period against Holland, just because we're really lacking any kind of width there. I mean, the only wingers in that squad are Cotterill and Lawrence, and with all due respect to Cotterill, I don't really want to see him in France. Again, nothing against him personally, but I feel like we've got younger, exciting players.
Yeah, so a little bit of a little background noise there. The only other one I kind of mentioned, simply because I guess he's playing with, you know, exalted company, not that we're weak in defence, is Regan Poole.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Van Gaal doesn't pick up 17-year-olds lightly. I'm pretty sure I probably shouldn't have
said that. We hope not, anyway. We certainly hope not.
He doesn't buy young teenage players lightly, and you know, he's been training with the first team. He's not, you know, been signed up and he's training with kids.
Paid $100,000 for him, didn't they?
I don't know. I wonder. You know, all it takes is maybe an injury or two. You know, Collins, Chester have had injuries. We've missed them. You know, we've had to be drafting Gunter in. We've drafted Ben Davis in. I would just wonder whether, you know, you see some.
So Regan Poole wasn't good enough for Cardiff City, but he is good enough for Manchester United.
No.
There we are.
Don't go there.
I think we're going to only take three centre backs, the three obvious ones, because the fact that Davis and Gunter have played there, that he's quite happy with, and obviously you want to get as much squad going as possible. I think for a centre-back to come in at this stage, Regan Poole, whoever, it'll have to be either a hell of an achievement or someone to drop out. By the way, I'm really sorry about this. I've got the pet hedgehog out and he's crawling fucking everywhere. So that's why I'm all over the place.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's part. I know Richard has got to get away as well, I know. Thanks for that. I think you've reminded me of things that I'd kind of forgotten about in a couple of instances. I just thought it'd be nice to kind of recap it and just sort of dwell on some of those moments that in the hustle and bustle of it you don't necessarily take in, or the anxiety or the unrelenting pessimism on the part of certain others. So thanks for that. Any other thoughts? I mean, as I said, the squad picked itself for Holland. Big challenge next week. It's not maybe a superstar Holland side or squad, but it's going to be a tough test for us. And I think
it is. I think it'll be a test of where we really are, to be perfectly honest. We've qualified, they haven't. I don't think they're as bad as everyone is saying that they are. I don't know what's gone on with their campaign. Clearly something hasn't gone right. Holland do have a habit of every 2 to 3 tournaments, they'll have a complete clanger. They've done this before. I don't think they didn't go to the World Cup in 2002, did they? Every 8 years they don't qualify for something?
They would implode.
And then they come back really, really strongly. They got lots of good players. They will bounce back. Not qualifying means they haven't got to worry about this game. Expectations will be low. I'd be happy with a draw. I think they're a better team than people are making out, to be perfectly honest.
I'd love to see a Ramsey-Schneider tussle.
Yeah, it's a shame that we're not really going to see either side's genuine strength, but at this time
he's genuinely injured as well, so there's nothing much you can do about it. And it's going to be fascinating to see how we cope without Bale. It's been a while. I mean, I think the last time was the last Holland game.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I think it'll be interesting in terms of, it'll be an insight into what's going on in the squad. But I mean, again, it's kind of you put the management team kind of in focus, and I would say, look, we lost against Bosnia. That was the end of an unbeaten run. Beat Andorra. Let's stay unbeaten again. Let's kind of build up a series of results. I think it'd be really nice to kind of, let's just grind out a 0-0. Let's do that, and let's kind of just set the wheels. I mean, Andorra was, you know, that's not really a significant kind of,
not a proper game against Andorra.
No, it's not
we
really.
Can't actually
yeah.
have a proper game.
Let's just
team.
Yeah, let's play without Ramsey, without Bale. Let's get a 0-0 or whatever. I mean, look, Holland have dropped Memphis and Van Persie, which you would imagine that's an internal kind of issue clearly going on there. I think we could beat them. I think they could beat us. Yeah, it'd be interesting. I just want to see high intensity, like a serious kind of an indication that there's absolutely no drop off of motivation.
Well.
Yeah, let's do that.
I was going to say, and it's good that it's at the Cardiff stage.
Oh yeah, no sooner had we qualified than it was all this talk that we might go to the Milan. I thought they can't do this now, because that could burst the bubble. Mm. You know, go to the Millennium, fail to fill the stadium, you could end up losing 2-0.
Yeah. Silence after 50 minutes.
No crowd. Yeah. And once again, players who are well-played professionals thinking, oh, why am I bothering with this?
Yeah.
We can't afford
it's terrestrial TV as well. It's on BBC Two. So that's important. That the people who kind of maybe, oh, I'll watch this because we just qualified.
Hugh, any thoughts on the Holland game next week in the squad today?
Yeah, I may have missed you saying it, but that's about the side that's put out. You're right, that you want to see a high intensity, I completely agree, you want to see a win, obviously. But I also feel, now we're in this situation, we've got to use the friendlies well. So I don't expect this to be a popular opinion. I think most people would rather we just put out the absolute strongest team we could and put over a fight. But I'd like us to put out a strong team, but for an hour, and try some other players. Because we do have a lot of players we call up who get very little run out or very little go. I mean, I'm not saying they should be starting, but Dummett and Henley, for example, have both been in a lot of squads. I don't think Henley's ever played for us. Dummett's played in the other Holland game. And I just feel like Taylor and Davis, we know what they offer at left back and at centre left back and left wing back. And I want to see us, especially with a lot of subs, try a couple of different things. I'm not saying we should rip it up. You don't want to try everything new and lose 4-0. But you also want to make sure that you use the friendly to your advantage, instead of just playing the same team. And obviously, I want to see a Wijn Von Williams get in, because, as I pointed out before, it's his 30th squad. It's the 30th squad he's been in, and he's yet to play, which I feel must be a record.
Yeah, I said this on the blog. I think that there ought to still remain a place for sentiment in the game, that people get a cap because they've been a good, you know, honest pro type, like when Roger Freestone got his cap, and Martin Margetson got the cap.
Or when
cap.
The British Lions pick a Scottish player.
Yeah.
You have to have one, don't you? So, but I'm fully in favour of that. Yeah.
So I think there needs to be a little bit of that, and we know what Hennessy can do. And I think he's hinted, Coleman, today in the press conference, that there might be some changes there. So
well,
maybe
Ward there as well, isn't
Ward gets a half, Von Williams gets a half. So yeah. I agree. I think we may as well give it a go, because this is actually the first friendly since the last Holland game. We had no friendlies last season, last sort of football season.
Oh yeah, no, because he didn't.
We had no friendlies
because he didn't see.
And he, you know, and he's justified in that, in the way things have turned out clearly. But if you're going to have them, you need to kind of do a little bit of experimentation with them, I think. So I think it'd be good to see something happening. Are you down in Cardiff for the game, Hugh?
And obviously, I want to see a wine Vaughan Williams get in, because, as I pointed out before, it's his 30th squad he's been in and he's yet to play, which I feel must be a record.
And I said this on the blog. I think they ought to still remain a place for sentiment in the game. That people get a cap because they've been a good, honest pro type. Like when Roger Freestone got his cap.
Daniel Ward there as well, isn't he?
Ward gets a half, Vaughan Williams gets a half. So I agree. I think we may as well give it a go. Because this is actually the first friendly since the last Holland game. We had no friendlies last season, last sort of football season.
Oh, yeah, no, because he didn't.
We had no friendlies.
He's
justified in that, in the way things have turned out, clearly. But if you're going to have them, you need to kind of do a little bit of experimentation with them, I think. So I think it'd be good to see something happening. Are you down in Cardiff for the game, Hugh?
No, I'm working.
No, oh, dear.
Sadly. I'll be watching it at home, same as I did for Andorra home game, in my living room, which is one of the most depressing places to watch for about 80 minutes.
It's on BBC Two, and I think it's great that games are back on terrestrial. And
yeah.
Hopefully BBC can muster up a nice little advert in the run-up, like, you know, with the old Dean Saunders golf swing. Or was it baseball swing? Or rounders swing, even.
Oh.
The bad news is, presumably, Savage will be on.
Well, let's call that a wrap. Thank you for your time, Hugh. Grateful.
No, I'm so sorry I was moving around, up and around rooms and everything. I was having issues with connectivity or whatever. I hope you've got what you can use.
Leon Skypes in as well, and it's a necessary evil, but we're well-versed in coping with that. And we've had Raphael Gela from Israel in by Skype, John Chapman, an English Belgian based journalist. So we're used to the vagaries of Skype and doing it via Wi-Fi. So as I said, grateful for your time,
Sorry,
maybe do it again sometime.
Thanks very much. Keep well.
You're welcome. Cheers.
Shut up.